welcome to Rewind, a podcast of 90s nostalgia. I'm one of your hosts here again, Mike Chin, and I'm here with my friend, Mike Scalise.
Hey, everybody.
All right. So this episode, we're going to be talking about two movies, American Pie 1 and 2. And I want to give a little disclaimer before we really get into talking about the movies themselves. I expect if you're listening, you're probably familiar with these movies. But just so we're clear, the movies had a lot of mature content. We're going to try to, keep at least our language fairly clean here. But we will be talking about some situations that are, for lack of a better word, sexual in nature and otherwise potentially, inappropriate. So if you're listening with your kids or anything like that, you might want to cast a critical ear towards that and make a decision if you want to keep listening with them in the room. But otherwise, I hope we'll have some fun talking about these two movies. There are a couple of movies that came out, the first one in 1999, the second one in 2001. So we are, bending the rules a little bit here of our podcast format because it's not strictly speaking all 90s nostalgia. But I will say, I think it does kind of represent more of a 90s aesthetic. It's sort of, I think American Pie 1 is sort of a culmination of the 90s in some ways. Of kind of, teen movies in that era and kind of in some ways sparked, I think, what came next. But I think in some ways it's kind of a capstone to that era. And so again, even though it kind of does bleed into the 2000s, I hope you all will excuse us for going in that area a little bit. But, basic premise of the movie centers on a bunch of, male teenage friends who are in their senior year of high school. It's for American Pie 1. And make a pact that they all want to get laid. They all want to have sex before they go off to college. A premise that probably hasn't aged that well. And again, we're going to talk about this later on in the podcast about elements of this that don't seem so comfortable from a 2020 perspective, maybe shouldn't have been so comfortable from a 1999 perspective. So rest assured, we will get into that. We're not advocating that this is what guys should do or what we did necessarily, but nonetheless, kind of looking back kind of through time at what was happening then. But that's the basic premise, and we'll drill into a lot more of the plot and characters as we go along here. But these were really successful movies. Just on some quick Wikipedia-based research, the budget for the first movie was only $11 million. It opening weekend made $18 million, and then a total box office gross of $235 million. And that's before DVD sales and whatever streaming licensing stuff is going on now and TV rights and all that. American Pie 2 had a budget of about $30 million, had a $45 million opening weekend, and a box office gross of $287 million. So both of these movies, kind of big successes, and there were some subsequent movies. We aren't focusing on them for the sake of the podcast, in part just for time constraints, in part because, if we're going to frame ourselves as a podcast of 90s nostalgia, it's really hard to defend 2005 and whatever it was, I think into the 2010s when the final American Pie movie came out. So we'll touch on those later, but we're not really focusing on those for the sake of the podcast. But with all of that square and just giving that context for people who maybe aren't as familiar or have kind of forgotten about these movies, Mike, let me toss it to you for a minute here. I'm just curious, what were your first memories of sort of, hearing about American Pie and kind of being able to access this film?
I think, now see, this is going back quite a ways, as you said, 1999. So, I mean, I was probably right around 16 years old, and I think I remember seeing some previews for it and thinking, I tend to like, comedies and, I like a lot of different kinds of movies, but this one kind of caught my eye in the previews and, but of course I noticed it was rated R. So I remember, being 16 at the time and saying, okay, well, I'll have to catch it at some other time because I can't go to the movie theater to see it. But what was interesting too, though, is that I was working for a local grocery store, and I remember a friend of mine, actually more of an acquaintance of mine, worked at the local movie theater, and so he knew me, and he knew I wasn't 17. So I just remember seeing the previews, wanting to see the movie, but then realizing that it would be pretty difficult for me to get in, especially for people who knew me and who knew I weren't, you know, wasn't, I think you had to be 17 to see an R-rated movie
right.
without an adult. And I definitely was not planning that with either of my parents.
Right.
How about yourself?
And I'll say, you know, similarly, and I think you may have been even a little more into it at the time, but I know for myself, it was kind of one of those it movies, you know, where it comes out and like, this is a really poor comparison, but like Titanic when it first came out, right? Like, where like everybody's like seeing this, everybody's talking about it, it feels sort of like monumental for the moment. It's funny because, you know, I think Titanic has kind of survived and, you know, because I think it was, you know, objectively, you know, a stronger picture, you know, won Academy Awards, all that. American Pie wasn't that kind of movie. But I think nonetheless, in terms of like, man, I've got to see this movie. Like, I need to be in the conversation. I feel like it almost landed in a similar place to that of like, you know, yeah, it's an R-rated movie. I can't literally get in the theater to see it, or at least not by any scrupulous means do that. But I still want to be in on this. It feels like it's like a cultural thing I need to be a part of.
Well, and yeah, I mean, you knew people were going to talk about it, like regardless of the fact that it didn't, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to win any Oscars, as you said, but, you know, you didn't want to be left out of the conversation either, you know, afterwards. So, yeah, understandably, you know, it was one of these, like you said, one of these types of it things that you wanted to really make sure you saw.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, I know that we both saw it, right? We both saw it. I think
yes.
We're supposed to see it. I won't get into the nitty gritty details or I won't name any names, but I know a bootleg copy of this was procured, was given to us essentially. So we were able to, you know, access this thing. And if I remember right, the American Pie one, it was not a very good copy of it, right? It was almost difficult to watch. I think it was sort of, and maybe you remember this better, but I think it just sort of was light and dark and kind of, you know, not clearly a professional copy of this movie, but you know, we got to see it based on that.
Essentially. And if I, you know, if I remember correctly, it may have even been a slightly different version.
Oh, I think that's right. Yeah.
Of the movie. I mean, essentially the same, but I think it may have had some scenes that have been cut and yeah, so it was definitely an interesting copy nonetheless, but essentially allowed us to watch the movie and get the gist of things.
Yeah. And so what about American Pie 2? So you know, it comes out 2 years later. Anything you remember about when that one came out?
Yeah, well, I mean, we had already seen American Pie 1 and so again, not wanting to be left out, I know at least I wanted to see the second one. For that one, it was really kind of interesting too. I had a friend in high school, an actual, you know, at this time, this was a friend of mine who worked, a different person, but who also worked at the local movie theater and a local video rental shop. So I don't know why I knew so many people that worked in...
You're in the movie business.
Yeah, seriously. But me and this person was, me and my friend and I, we were pretty, you know, pretty good friends. So he told me that American Pie 2 was coming out I think it was on a Friday. And he said, if you want, you can come screen it before everybody else on Thursday night at something like 10 or 11 o'clock. And so, so of course I was like, heck yes. And then I thought, well, you know, there was, frankly, a girl I wanted to date and a couple of her friends that I knew had seen the first one and liked it. So I, of course, asked if they wanted to join me, which they did. And then I just asked my friend if it was okay if I brought a few friends along, and he was like, yeah, not a problem. So yeah, I mean, that was the very beginning of all of it, is that I got to see it in advance the night before, and the movie theater was in the mall, our local mall. And so when the movie got out, we were actually kind of trapped in the mall itself, and we had to figure out, we couldn't go through any of the department stores that we I think, had come in through. So we just had to find one of those kind of emergency exit kind of doors and make our way out and then walk around the perimeter of the mall to even just get back to our cars. But yeah, so that was the early parts of at least seeing the second movie.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's one of those things where I think as much as the first one had, you know, buzz around and you wanted to kind of, you know, be in on that conversation, you know, for the second one, I feel like in some ways less buzz because, you know, it's a sequel, so we already kind of, you know what it is. But in some ways, I feel like it actually kind of spread, you know, maybe not as intensely, but more broadly, because now people had seen the first one, you know, and now we were of the age where, you know, maybe, you know, I'm a year older than you, so I probably could have seen it in the theater, but I didn't. But, you know, but at that point, more people 2 years later had access that movie, whether it was seeing in the theater or whether it was, you know, when it actually did come out on, you know, VHS and DVD and they rented it from Blockbuster. You know, and now it was kind of out in the air. We'd seen one. And so, you know, you really want to see two because one was, you know, so well received by people, I think, you know, around our age, our generation, you know, all that. So. But yeah, I remember being kind of jealous of that when you got to go to the theater and, you know, and some of that's just, you know, we're showing where we were in life. But actually 2001, I forget if I would have been, I would have already gone to college. Maybe I was working my camp job at that time. Cause I was going to say, you know, my family could be a little more restrictive about, you know, being out late at night and they might not have let me go. But I think that actually would have been at the point when I just would have been, you know, off at my job and probably not in the picture there to be able to attend with you there. But kind of a cool memory though. I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, we remember from our youth. It's kind of silly in retrospect because it's like, you know, it would have come out on DVD like 6 months later. We could have just, you know, seen it just as easily then. But you're having that memory of, you know, going with friends and getting to see it early. That's kind of a cool thing, you know, just to be able to add on for nostalgia purposes.
Yeah, and to this date, I mean, that's probably one of the, it was one of the most fun experiences as far as movie going goes. And you know, it only came out 2 years later, I think, right? 2001, you said? And yeah. The first came out in 1999. So they didn't waste much time coming out with a sequel. And so I think they were really riding that wave as much as they could. And the completists out there, like, again, like me, I like to see, I like to collect, I like to do, if there's a finite number, I kind of like to check it all off the list. So, frankly, they brought back just about every character too. I know sometimes sequels, there might be, you know, some shift there, but I think for the most part, every actor that was in the first one, main actor was in the second one.
Yeah, and we'll get into the cast in just a minute here, but I do think that's one of the kind of interesting things to think about is, you know, these were all people who, like, you say Jason Biggs, you say Chris Klein, you say Mina Suvari, like, I can picture these people immediately in my head, like, they were legitimate celebrities, you know, you can call them movie stars, but didn't necessarily go on to, like, the biggest careers, you know, so some more than others had, you know, other, you know, movies, other TV shows they were a part of for years, but, you know, they weren't necessarily blowing up, and it's like, oh, man, how are we going to get them back for the sequel? It's like, well, this is probably the biggest opportunity they had, and especially, you know, from money, from an exposure perspective, like, it sort of does make sense in retrospect. They would all be like, well, heck yeah, I'm going to do American Pie, too. Like, why wouldn't I, you know, at this point? But yeah, I think you're absolutely right, though, that there wasn't that sense of sort of, you know, lack of continuity, where it's like someone major is obviously missing from this sequel, so either we, you know, recast the same role and it's kind of awkward, like they did for Back to the Future, or we, you know, just kind of forget they existed, or you know, make a reason for them to disappear, like for Karate Kid, where he has a different girlfriend in every movie. Where I think, you know, it does take away something from the film when you lose some of the cast like that. But the last thing I'll say, but before we start talking about cast a little more, is just, I remember that we also got our hands on a copy of American Pie 2, but before it was out on DVD, I think while it was still in theaters. And again, I don't want to name names, and I don't even remember all the particulars of it, but I know we had a video file of that one that I think what was in this case, you know, pretty directly just the movie itself. It wasn't like a weird edited version or, you know, one that was poor quality. And I'll say my memory of it is that I had it on a burned CD, so I could, you know, put it into my desktop PC in my dorm room. And for, you know, the first few weeks that I was at college, I was able to, you know, put that in and show people. And it was kind of like one of my things, like, oh, he's a guy who has American Pie too. Like that's like his like claim to fame for that brief period of time. So kind of just a funny memory in retrospect, again, kind of silly based on, you know, where we are now in life, but something that I remember from that.
Right. And it was a sign of the times. You were talking about burned CDs. Nick, and you had mentioned before, like, oh yeah, when we were looking to see it in the movie theater, yeah, we could have waited until it was out on VHS and rent it from Blockbuster. I mean, you know, but yeah, that you're right. That was kind of cool. I mean, that was the cool thing back then, you know. I mean, you had burned CDs, you had, and especially at college, you also had faster internet connections than you would at home with your dial-up internet.
Right.
So, but yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, so I have a cast list that I kind of compiled for us here that is not comprehensive. There's just a lot of more minor characters or people who, you know, are more difficult to identify who I, you know, don't have listed here. But I snagged, I think, kind of the core crew and then a few of the people who went on to do some interesting things or had done some interesting things before this movie who, you know, I thought might be worth addressing. So I want to just, you know, start out by, you know, are there names or characters that kind of stick out to you from these movies as being, you know, the ones that you were most drawn to or most interested in, or you were kind of, you know, interested in their careers beyond this film? Any thoughts on that?
Well, like you said before, I mean, there's only a select few here that had kind of notable careers afterwards, and even still, you know, sometimes only through like the mid 2000s, mid 00s. And so when I look at this, like Sean William Scott stands out.
Yeah.
He definitely had, he had a nice little run there for a while, following the American Pie series. Let's see, he was in like Road Trip, you know, but he played that kind of character a lot. And so, yeah, he stands out to me.
I'll pause on Sean William Scott there too, just because it's interesting. Because in some ways, I think of him as not being kind of like one of the core guys in this movie, right? Because there's kind of that unit of friends, where it's Jason Biggs and it's, you know, Chris Klein as Oz, and you know, Kevin, who's kind of the one who's setting up the whole, you know, the whole pact to all have sex before they go to college, and you know, and I think, you know, Finch is kind of part of that, Eddie K. Thomas. But Stifler is sort of like the odd man out, where he's like sort of friends with them. Like he plays across with Chris Klein's character. But he's also like sort of just a jerk to everybody, right? Where he's always just kind of, you know, that guy who's picking fun of people, and he's sort of a jock and all that stuff. But sort of ends up standing out from the movie, right? Like I sort of think of Jason Biggs as being the star of the movie, like kind of our protagonist if we had to pick just one. And yet if once you finish watching that first movie, it's like who do you remember? Who's going to be like a star coming out of this? I feel like it's probably Sean William Scott. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I would. And I think it's because of exactly what you said, you know, in terms of screen time. Yeah, he probably didn't have as much as a lot of the other characters, but I mean, in every scene that he's in, he's doing something completely off the wall.
Right. I mean,
saying something crazy, or he's doing something crazy, or he's, you know, like he's making fun of people, or it doesn't matter. But he and frankly, he's, in many ways, he's, well, he's just very memorable. So yeah, you're right. It does make sense. But it's a double-edged sword, because when you do that, then you, he's kind of like, he's typecast now a bit.
Right,
he's that guy. So if you know, and do I see him playing a serious role? No, not after that movie. But I don't know that I ever have seen him in a serious role.
Well, no, and that's kind of the thing. Like, if I had to relate it to something more modern, I might even draw us to like the Hangover movies, for example, where it's like, you know, like Ed Helms is, you know, is as much a core cast member as, you know, as Zach Galifianakis is, and as much a core character Brad, why am I blanking on his last name? Bradley Cooper.
Cooper.
Yeah. But I feel like Bradley Cooper and Zach Galifianakis kind of just jump off the screen in that first film, at least. Right. And like, mm-hmm. I think that they sort of represent the opposite ends of the spectrum of Zach Galifianakis. That kind of launched him as sort of a big comedy star of our era, or the more modern era, I guess you could say. But I don't ever see him doing something super serious at this point. Right. I think it's just hard to imagine that would really fit his skill set. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but whereas I think of Bradley Cooper as, making that transition where, he does A Star Is Born and he does, all these other, more serious leading man kind of roles where he actually did make the leap based on his charisma. But Sean William Scott, I think he had a moment there where for like a, 5-6 year stretch, he was in a lot of movies and he even had some bigger parts and all that. I think they tried to cast him in some sort of like action-y kind of movies, but he was really a guy of that moment. Like he was a comedy guy for a teen movie. And once he aged out of that and once the world kind of moved on, it was really hard to, find as featured a role, at least for him again.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Another person that I think made that leap when necessary, believe it or not, was Robin Williams. Robin Williams as a comedian, and he was a great comedian and had a lot of really kind of funny roles. But he has played serious parts too, and in some cases remarkably well. One of my favorite movies, Good Will Hunting, plays a very serious role. I think a mental health therapist or psychologist, and it's to me it's one of his best. But until he did it, you might think otherwise, and yeah. But I do think your assessment is probably correct with Sean William Scott, though. And the world kind of moved on from that type of character, that type of role, and so he's kind of faded a bit over the years.
Yeah, and I'll just say, as one more addition to that particular discussion, I'll just say, just because I know he's a guy who we've both kind of know more about, and any I think person who grew up in the 80s and 90s, he's a huge part of their life. Arnold Schwarzenegger. The guy is a world-class bodybuilder and makes the leap into films, which, he could do, I think, based on his kind of star power and charisma and all of that. And it's a very natural adjustment to do action films. Like that's just sort of, where I would guess a bodybuilder would go. But then he very strategically shifts gears and does Twins, right? It is a comedy with Danny DeVito. There were other comedies he was in after other family movies and all sorts of stuff, but taking that gamble, right? And I think it doesn't pay off for everyone and it doesn't work with everyone, but some people, I think, I've seen some interviews with him where he talks about that he didn't want to be pigeonholed and he recognized it's because this sounds so outlandish that like the most famous action star in the movie is going to start doing comedies. Like that's why I want to do it, because that's going to draw people too, and that's going to elongate my career by diversifying what I can do. But still interesting stuff, and a bit far afield from American Pie, admittedly, but I think right. Still interesting to see how these different things kind of evolve. But just touching upon some other people on the cast here, I'll make mention of Allison Hannigan. She was one of my big celebrity crushes from that era. Not so much for American Pie. I was a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, and so it was her character of Willow, especially around season 3, season 4, that I was really kind of enamored with. In American Pie, she has sort of a very different role to play. She shows certainly a more raunchy side to herself. But I think sort of it underserves her as an actress, I think. I think it's probably important to her career because it put it in front of more eyeballs. And I think there's an argument that she's actually, of all the people in this cast, the one with the greatest longevity, because she was still doing Buffy before and after these movies. And she went on to do How I Met Your Mother and to have a bunch of, smaller parts and other things. And so you had a pretty long, successful career as an actress, as far as I know, is still, active to some degree. But stands out because, again, she's not really a core cast member here in the same way as, kind of the main guys. But nonetheless, I think kind of distinguishes herself to some degree and kind of steals scenes, when she does get her moments on screen there.
I would agree with that. I would agree with all that.
Anyone else from the cast here who kind of pops out to you or you kind of want to talk about here?
I don't think so. There's, like you said, there's some that have kind of had a little bit more longevity than others. I mean, we could always come back to this, but Eugene Levy.
Yeah.
I really like the guy. And maybe it's because I'm a dad now, you know, and he plays the dad character literally in the entire American Pie series, like original and all of the spin-offs.
Yeah.
So he's the only person to kind of make his way through the whole thing. And again, if we, you know, we can touch on this in a little bit later, but and he's had a decent career himself. I think he went on to write and produce Schitt's Creek and a few other notable productions. But in any case, in the context of American Pie, I'd like to talk about him a little bit later.
Yeah, no, and I think that there are a lot of, you know, parents in movies like this who are kind of forgettable or just kind of there to be an older person in the room. Whereas, you know, he was an established actor before this. He carried on to do a lot of things after this. And it's almost sort of he's like playing down a little bit. Like he's just kind of, you know, filling the spot that I think he's sort of overqualified to do. But I think he does in that way kind of elevate it. And I don't know that, you know, Jason Biggs's Jim character kind of comes across as well without that father figure to kind of play off of so well. So I think he's a great one to bring up. I'll have just a couple of people real quickly here, but there's Jason Biggs himself, who again I think is, you know, probably the leading man objectively speaking in at least the first movie. But I think he does kind of fall victim to that pigeonholing of it's sort of hard to see him in other things and take him seriously after, you know, these films. And so, you know, had his moment with American Pie, and I know he made other movies. I know he, you know, later appeared in Orange is the New Black and things like that, but I feel like this was kind of his moment here in these movies. This is the as high as he got. There's, you know, Thomas Ian Nicholas plays Kevin, who I randomly rewatched Rookie of the Year a couple of months ago. I think once I got Disney Plus, I remember really liking that movie when I was a little kid, and forgot that he starred in that as sort of a child actor. And so did a range of things, at least in his younger years. There's Chris Owen, who plays the Shermanator, who I imagine we'll probably talk about a little later on, but he was in some other things. He was in Angus, which is probably my favorite film of the 90s, but not a lot of people really saw that one, and it's not, you know, a super hit like American Pie by any stretch. And the last guy I'll make mention of here is just John Cho, who has kind of a throwaway role as one of the MILF guys, right? That's Moms I'd Like to F-Word. He's sort of just shown in the background of a party in this movie, kind of just being obnoxious, being a drunken teen. And he comes back in some subsequent movies kind of in the exact same role. But ironically, of all people, as being a total background player in this, becomes, I would say, probably a better established movie star than just about anybody else in the young cast of this film. He goes on to, you know, I think most immediately after this, you know, Harold and Kumar, he plays one of the titular roles there. But then also, you know, in subsequent years, you know, goes on to do Star Trek and, to appear in a lot of other, films and TV and kind of be a fairly significant actor of his generation. And you wouldn't guess it based on this role, I don't think.
You know who else is, this person isn't in your list of characters, understandably, but in rewatching this movie, going back to Thomas Ian Nicholas, his brother in the movie is actually Casey Affleck.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so, and again, it didn't dawn on me the first few times I watched the movie, but then, I'm a huge Good Will Hunting fan, and he was obviously one of the cast members in that movie. And so it's just kind of interesting to see that too. You know, he plays the older brother who kind of advises and guides Kevin on kind of what to do. He's that, you know, that advice giver. And actually, in both movies, in American Pie One and American Pie Two.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's one of those guys who, I think he sort of was under his brother's shadow, Ben Affleck, you know, for years and years, and then became, you know, a leading man in his own right. And I know there's some baggage around, I think, sort of sexual harassment allegations around him and things like that. So I'm not necessarily going to, you know, join the Casey Affleck fan club here, but nonetheless, yeah, it is interesting that he plays such a minor role in this movie. But yeah, I think, yeah, probably even more than John Cho, he does go on to be a major film star in his own right. So that's a great catch.
And I'll take it a step further. Not listed here, again, completely understandably. Blink 182.
That's fair, right.
Right, aside from having a place on their soundtrack, they make an appearance in the movie, the band.
I think it's one and two that they both appear in, yeah.
Oh, I knew the first one. I didn't know about the second one. But again, you know, people who are, of course, credited in the credits, but by no means any kind of, you know, main role or anything. And these are the people that are that have like the longevity and the bigger careers, objectively speaking.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you know, and it's interesting. It's sort of a symbiotic relationship, like almost in this case, because, you know, Blink 182, they've been around for the 90s. Like I really like them from you know, some of their earlier albums. Like the song "Damn It" was the first one that I'd heard from them and got really attached to. But I think that they were sort of peaking around the time the original American Pie came out, at the very end of the 90s, very early 2000s. And it's sort of, I think it's just one of those things where it's kind of serendipitous that they end up becoming this huge band, this movie explodes. And I think they really helped each other. I can't say that I think one really elevated the other, you know, meaningfully, but I think the fact that, you know, this band of the moment and this movie of the moment kind of coalesced with each other just sort of worked perfectly and probably appealed to a very similar audience too.
Yes. Yes. I would agree with that.
Yeah. But all right, let's get into the movie itself a little bit here. And, you know, so you and I both kind of took a stab at just kind of compiling what we thought, I think, were some of the most, you know, memorable or kind of iconic moments of these movies, the ones that we think of when we think of, you know, American Pie. And so, well, let me toss it to you first. Are there ones that stand out to you that, you know, either just kind of representative of the film or, you know, personal favorites or the funniest moments or, you know, however you kind of want to take that?
Ooh, well, so it's interesting to think about because I think there are a few iconic scenes and things that a lot of people think about when they think about this movie. But I'm gonna shift it a little bit and say that one of the scenes that have become one of my favorite is the one where Oz Stryker is starting to join the choir and doing the whole Scooby-Doo up, yeah, magic, yeah. You know, and singing with Heather. And because like you and I have a history in a cappella. Mm-hmm. And so I've come to appreciate that. It's nothing, you know, super crazy as far as, you know, relative to the other scenes in this movie, but I've come to appreciate that. And again, it's probably a little boring there, but also I'm going to go back to Eugene Levy. You know, there's a scene where Jim is getting ready for prom in American Pie 1. And he's already been through a few different debacles where his father has, you know, caught him at awkward moments or had to, or in some cases created awkward moments for him.
He walks in on Jim having intercourse with a pie at one point. So it doesn't get much more awkward than that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly so. And so, but you know, there's a series of things like that throughout the movie. And, you know, as it gets closer to the, so when he gets ready for prom, you know, Jim comes out of his room and his dad's, you know, talking to him, and he just kind of gives him that fatherly, you know, just that fatherly talk. And I forgot exactly what he said, but it was reading between the lines, it's like, you know, I'm here for you, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think Jim gets that because he gives his dad a hug and you know, he says, thanks, dad. Or something along those lines, but it was just a moment that they shared together where it was like, you know, like the notion was, I know I'm getting myself into all these situations, and it's awkward and it's embarrassing and da 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 da. But like when push comes to shove, you know, he loves his, Eugene loves his son, and his son, you know, Jim loves him, and it's just a nice moment amidst, you know, a pretty raunchy comedy kind of thing. So for that reason, I'm going to say I really kind of enjoyed that. I mean, there are a lot of scenes that are, you know, that are funny, but yeah, that one kind of stands out to me. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that's a part of why these movies hold up to the extent they do, or why at least we remember them fondly, is that, you know, there's a lot of raunchy comedy in here. There's a lot of, you know, sexist moments, a lot of things that are, you know, kind of homophobic and problematic when we look at them from a 2020 lens, especially. But some of those core relationships, you know, like the Jim and his dad thing, I think that is a sweet relationship, you know, and they play it for laughs, you know, and Eugene Levy's, you know, character is often, you know, trying to act cool or trying to act, you know, he's like, you know, able to talk about sex in a hip way when really he's not very well equipped for it. But at the heart of the matter, you can see that, you know, he genuinely cares about his son, and his son genuinely loves him, and, you know, and they are supporting each other, and, you know, and trying to be kind to each other in these moments that, you know, I think it'd be easy to kind of do a version of this where the dad is just kind of coming down on him, or where the dad's just, you know, a total geek and, you know, sort of like as a slapstick comedy character. You know, and while he's a little bit over the top, and they do play it for laughs, I actually feel like it's a more believable and more kind of heartfelt relationship there. And I think that carries over to the second movie as well. Go ahead.
Can I just jump in there too? And then I want to hear about what you think, or what some of your favorite scenes were. But interestingly enough, in my research, I read that apparently his character was kind of written a little bit more creepy than it was. And so, but Eugene wanted it to be more of like a, kind of like a square, you know, father figure, kind of boring type of role. And I think, so they did. They changed his role a bit, and I'm glad that Eugene wanted that, and I'm glad that they followed through with it, because I think, to your point earlier, I think it made for a better movie and like a more believable relationship there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great read on that, and I didn't know that, but that makes a lot of sense. And I'll say that, you know, kind of related to that, the other thing I was going to say about relationships in this movie is, especially between the male friends here, kind of the core group of guys, the quest that they're on, the objective being to have sex with somebody, obviously that's sort of the stuff of teen comedy, and that's the stuff that, you know, arguably hasn't aged that well. But I'd say the spirit of it being just kind of these hapless guys who kind of support each other and keep getting into trouble together, like, that shares more like DNA of a movie with something like, you know, like the Goonies or something, where it's just like a bunch of kids getting into trouble. You know, they're, you know, searching treasure and getting into, you know, kind of magical adventures. Here they're, you know, just trying to hook up with girls. But there's a similar spirit to that of just kind of, you know, friends who are, you know, kind of don't know what they're doing and just kind of doing the best they know how and kind of making a lot of mistakes. And all of that, that I think really does translate well. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, while it might be that when, you know, when we were, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, that we laughed the loudest at, you know, the sex jokes and, you know, things like that. I think, you know, when I go back and look at this, there's almost a nostalgic feel for remembering, you know, what those high school friendships were like, you know, and not say that we, you know, don't still have our friendships, you know, and, you know, you and I are an example of that. You know, we've been friends since elementary school, you know, and still are, you know, into fatherhood and into our, you know, adult lives. But it's not quite the same, I think, as, you know, the people you kind of come up with, and you're just so in each other's lives and trying to figure it all out together. And, you know, you live with your parents, you have them as a resource, and yet you don't want to ask them for advice about, you know, how to ask a girl out or something like that. You try to just cobble it together yourself in a way that I think is sort of unique to that point in life. And I think that's part of what, you know, really drives this movie and makes it work.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of relatable moments. It you know, in this movie, and even in our, you know, kind of really close-knit guy group, you know, it's like you know, Stifler's kind of a loose cannon, and, you know, we could probably point a few fingers for you know, people in our group that are a little bit more unpredictable than others.
This is a great time to thank Mike Peake for the theme music.
Yes, I didn't want to say any names, but closer than close, you know, like,
yeah,
like in this movie, obviously they're always hanging out or they're talking to one another. They're going to parties, you know, together. And back in high school, like we would all hang out. We all had, you know, Peak's basement to go to, or, you know, if we were, just, you know, going out to eat or something like that. Like we acted as a unit and you're absolutely right about, it's funny that, you know, you live with your parents, but you don't go to them for like the advice that you want. And you go to your older sibling or a friend's older sibling. And here we are, you know, again, Kevin's character always looking to his brother. Right. So, you know, it's, yeah, I think you're right on point with that.
Yeah. But great. Well, and so there's a lot of other moments I think we're probably going to come back to in different parts of the episode. You know, things like the live stream when Nadia's in Jim's room. I think that's going to bear some attention when we talk about kind of how things have aged and, you know, whether they would work now with the whole webcam incorporated into it and all that. But the other thing I'll just make mention of, and again, there's so much stuff. We haven't really touched upon, you know, Finch much, but he does have that, you know, period where he gets the laxatives and has to run through the school, which I think is a pretty memorable scene, and hopefully not relatable to too many people, though I think a lot of us have been there at least once. But there's a, you know, when Jim finally, you know, does hook up with Michelle, and there's some stuff with Nadia that we might get to a little bit more. But but the other thing, just as I was kind of thinking about most memorable kind of stuff or stuff that I kind of continue to quote or think about randomly, I was surprised by how much of it came back to Oz for me, Chris Klein's character, where I think of him as being in some ways one of the less interesting characters in the movie, one of the ones I certainly identified with less. But he has that scene very early on where he's trying to, you know, he goes on a date with a college girl and tries to kind of coax her into, you know, doing something in the car and just fumbles it so badly. And it sort of, you know, I think shows that he's, you know, he's more athletic. He's, you know, better looking than the other guys maybe, but he still is sort of hapless, just doesn't really know what he's doing and puts himself in these bad spots. There's the, you know, the him singing with the jazz choir that you referenced earlier, where I still randomly break out the Scooby Dooby Doo Wop, yeah, magic around our house for no reason. But, you know, my wife is of a similar generation, so knows exactly what I'm doing and will give it back to me, you know. And it's just a throwaway thing in the film, but I think it does stick with you. There's the point when he leaves the lacrosse game, you know, in the kind of a climactic point in the movie, where I really like that moment in the movie. And I think part of it is that there might've been a temptation to just make American Pie more of like a high school sports movie. Like this could have been, that could have been the football team, and it could have been a climactic game where he kind of, you know, charges off dramatically. But I think they strike just the right balance of it being sort of dramatic. It is some sort of important game. They're playing a rival school or something like that. But it's not like a big championship with tons of people watching or anything. And he just sort of, you know, has this moment of realization that he'd rather be singing in the jazz choir with his new girlfriend than, you know, playing lacrosse with these guys he doesn't really like very much. That I think just plays really well. And I think it's sort of a cliche, but I think nonetheless, it's played at kind of just the right level to demonstrate kind of change in the character and be sort of funny, because Stifler sort of left there calling after him in kind of awkward fashion the way Stifler does. But we know that he's kind of going off to do, you know, the right thing at that point. But yeah, with all that said, anything else from the first movie that you wanted to make mention of?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I will say again, not to agree with you, but I think you're right. I think it strikes that good balance there. That specific scene that you referenced, and just so you know, that would the importance of that game was that I think it was their last game. So he
okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so are you going to spend your last, you know, game not playing and going and doing the right thing, or are you going to play and then ditch the girl who asked you to prom and who,
yeah,
you
know,
you could see a future with? So right. I like he made the right decision.
No, I think so too. Yeah. But all right, so we're not going to probably go as far, you know, into the weeds with American Pie 2 here, but I did want to ask more broadly, and then we can touch upon, you know, maybe a handful of scenes from this movie, but how do you think it held up? How do you think it compares to the original?
You know, I have to be honest. I think 1 and 2 are closer than 2 and, I guess, American Wedding. Not that we're talking about that, because that came out quite a bit later. But you know, I think it held up pretty well. I think you mentioned earlier that, you know, it didn't have the same kind of like, it didn't hit people as hard as the first one because it wasn't the first at this point. You know, it wasn't that that kind of first foray into this kind of a comedy. But I do think I mentioned earlier that you know, they brought back virtually all of the main characters, which is good. And I think that the storyline, you know, I think it was a good continuation. There were certain parts I probably wouldn't have spent as much time on if I was directing the movie, but all in all, I mean, I would say that that it was like an appropriate continuation of the first American Pie.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of framing it, because I think, you know, one of the knocks you could make on a movie like this is that it doesn't really break, you know, new ground and, you know, do anything super original. And in fact, a lot of it sort of mirrors the first movie in a lot of ways in terms of the kinds of gags they're playing and where they fall in the movie. But I almost feel like it's one of those series where you can sort of take these two movies as a unit. Right, like, cause I think that there are movies that operate very differently with their sequels. Like, we referenced, I'll go back to two that we referenced earlier, but Karate Kid and Hangover that we mentioned earlier. Both those, I feel like there's a pretty steep drop off after the first one, and I think arguably even a steeper drop off. You know, we go from two to three, but in this one, I feel like American Pie 2 really does hold up. If you just want to treat this as like a 3.5 hour, 4 hour movie and watch the two of them back to back, I think it kind of works, right? I think that they operate similarly, but of similar quality, that you can, you know, really just be more or less equally into them. I don't think American Pie 2 is quite as good as American Pie, but I think that it, you know, it is a very comparable quality overall and holds true to the format.
You know what they, it almost feels like they just kind of like took everybody and like picked them up and then put them in a different spot.
Right.
You know, and so this is, so yeah, you really could just watch them back to back and just see kind of the progression there. But yeah, most people, or most of the characters kind of fill the same roles. They act the same types of, you know, awkward situations. So yeah.
Yeah, well, great. Well, and so again, I don't know that we're going to spend nearly as much time talking about American Pie 2 here, but any specific, you know, parts of this, characters from this, moments, quotes, anything that really stands out to you from American Pie 2?
I really like the fact that they decided as a group to go to... Was it a lake house? I don't know if it was.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that's something that I always really enjoyed doing, was, you know, getting a group together and like going somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a piece of me that is a little bit like nostalgic about this movie, because it's like a group of guys who, again, are acting as kind of one unit, who, you know, they're venturing out of their hometown and they're going to, like, you know, to new territory. And so, and I think it's for the entire summer. And so, there's a piece of me that just really likes the idea that they put this movie in a different setting, than the first one, just as a means to be able to, kind of experience the new setting and whatnot. So I like that. Obviously, Jim had his share of awkward moments, and some of those were kind of funny. And other than that, though, I mean, there are a couple things that I thought were very unbelievable, like in the movie, like Shermanator ends up with Nadia. Yeah. I just don't know that's you know, and the way it happens, you know, like she's laughing at a Shermanator thing when it And I,
no, I mean, yeah, that obviously, you know, takes some real suspension of disbelief. And I would say the whole bit with, you know, Stifler and the lesbian couple and ending up, you know, hooking up with both of them. Like, I actually, the first half of that scenario where they realize that these women are lesbians and within their, you know, teenage boy kind of fascination, try to, you know, see them in action. And get caught and, you know, and get in trouble, like that all actually kind of played out, you know, fairly believable to me. The latter part where they end up hooking up with him, like that felt very much like, okay, so this is just sort of centered from Stifler's perspective and to make him look kind of like this is like a male fantasy version of what a lesbian couple would be and how they would interact with this, you know, teenage kid that I don't buy and I don't think it necessarily holds up that well. But, you know, it's the kind of movie that this is, that it sort of makes sense in the internal logic of the movie.
Right, exactly. That's a good way to say it. So how about yourself? What do you remember from the movie?
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, it's a lot of, you know, similar stuff to what you're talking about. You know, I think the Jim and his dad scenario where they're in his car after he has that accident with, you know, using super glue to touch himself. I think that scene, I think, sort of is supposed to mirror the scene where he's, you know, involved with the pie in the original movie. And I think the fact that similarly his dad kind of bails him out and they have another heart to heart in the car, I think that's kind of a sweet moment, you know, directly after an extremely, you know, over the top kind of raunchy moment. So I think that works well. There's a scene really early on in the movie where they're first driving off the lake because they reveal that, you know, between the core four guys, they're not going to be able to afford this lake house on their own. And they reveal that they've got Stifler coming too. And the way they revealed is just showing them, you know, driving on the highway and he's, you know, popping out of the top of the car and screaming and they're playing, I think it's that Sum 41 song, Fat Lip, over it. Like that always stands out to me as just a really fun scene of kind of like high energy and like, you know, that excitement of when you're young and you're going off on a trip with the guys, like you were talking about. You know, I think they represent that well of just kind of, you know, feeling like you're invincible in that moment and like, you know, you're away from your parents, you're away from, you know, school and, you know, people can kind of control you and you're just, you know, doing your own thing. I think that's just sort of a fun moment in the movie there. And we'll talk about it later, that the phone sex bit between Oz and Heather, that they try to negotiate something long distance there. I think that's going to show up in our discussion of, you know, how things have aged. I'll hold off on that. But yeah, and then the only other thing that kind of stands out to me from this list that the two of us compiled was just, you know, when Jim leaves Nadia and goes off to the band camp to be with Michelle, you know, and plays the trombone terribly, doesn't really know what he's doing, but, you know, it's an over the top kind of very movie thing. I don't think any of that would play out that way in real life, but I think it's fun. I think it's sweet. I think the fact that he ends up with Michelle is sort of a nice tying up of loose ends from the first film, you know, because they sleep together in the first one and that kind of is all that they are to each other. And I think that kind of works in its own way. But this sort of showing some growth for both of the characters. That Jim, like, you know, he actually prioritizes a relationship with someone who he gets along with over just hooking up with the girl he has a crush on at that point. I think that shows some real growth for the character. You know, and I think it's just sort of a sweet moment when they're in front of the whole camp and, you know, finally get together and run off together there. All right, so let's move ahead then and talk a little bit about the American Pie movies. So, you know, in the direct series of films and featuring most of the same cast, there's American Wedding, which, you know, it feels like it was a lot later, but it actually was just another 2-year gap. It was in 2003 that one came out. And then there's American Reunion, which that one there actually is a really significant gap because it's not until 2012 that they do that. It's almost a full decade removed. And in between all of those, and I forget when they started, it may have even been before American Wedding, I think, that the first one of them rolled out, but they have these American Pie band camp movies where it features Stifler's younger brother, and I think Eugene Levy appears in some, if not all of these, but there might be some other cast members who overlap, but they're these straight to home video, you know, kind of movies that, you know, didn't get theatrical releases. I don't think anyone would argue are as good. I think I may have seen one of them at some point, but I never really tried to follow them. But in any event, I want to just kind of see in general, you know, your impression of the subsequent American Pie movies after American Pie 2.
Well, I can, honestly, I can only speak to American Wedding. So American Reunion is actually not one that I've seen as part of the original series. And like you, I may have seen one of the spin-off series, but yeah, I think there were like five And yeah, Eugene Levy, though, I know has been in all of them. But as far as American Wedding goes, yeah, for some reason I thought that had come a lot later than the first couple of American Pies. But what I would say though is that that's kind of the odd one out. I feel like Stifler tried to play a similar role to the other two, and he was still kind of like the jerk and you know, person to make fun of everybody else. But I think it seemed like a little bit overdone. As far as you know, like the rest of the characters. Well, first of all, a lot of the characters just weren't in American Wedding that were in the first two. So you know, Shermanator wasn't in there. Oz, that's an interesting one because Oz was in American Pies 1 and 2. And I've read that he was in American Reunion. So I think it's kind of, it's odd and uncommon to have, to snub somebody for one of the sequels, yet bring them back for another. Heather wasn't in American Wedding, Jessica, Vicky. So it was definitely a shift in terms of the cast. The number of people that were part of that. But in general, I just thought it was a different type of movie, even though it was part of the original American Pie series. And I think there were a lot of parts of that I actually liked. And I thought it was a little bit less raunchy than the first two. Then again, everybody's a little bit older. So maybe that kind of played into it. What is your take on it?
Yeah, you know, and I just really didn't like American Wedding very much at all. And, you know, it felt like a really steep drop off to me. And I think you're right. Some of it is, it's just a different kind of movie. Really felt to me, and this is how I feel about The Hangover 3 as well. Like Hangover 2, I'll admit, is not nearly as good as Hangover 1, but I think Hangover 3 just kind of drives off a cliff. Like it goes from like an A movie to like a B movie to like an F movie. And I don't think the drop-off is quite as steep in this case, but I think it's more comparable, where it really felt like the kind of movie to me where it's like you don't have the full cast anymore. It doesn't kind of organically make sense for them all to be hanging out anymore. It really just sort of feels like we're cashing in on a franchise that we know can make some money at this point, and it isn't really honoring the spirit of what the movies were anymore. But to some of the points that you were bringing up, you know, I think some of it's a place of in life kind of issue, of that the first two movies, it's right at the end of high school, and then it's very early in their college careers. This is when they're all out of college, where it's kind of set. And I don't know how that works in terms of real life timing versus movie time and how that moves, but it seems cast in that way, that they're all out of college, they're all kind of adults at this point. And to me, it really feels as though, I think that's what makes it feel like it was so much later that this movie came out, is that in life, it feels like that they're a lot later along. But also I just sort of feel as though that the antics that they get into, like very much feel like, you know, high school, college comedy kind of antics, where it's like, well, you're adults now, like this kind of stuff isn't happening to you anymore, or you really should know better at this point. It just didn't work for me in kind of the same way I think that the first two did. And I'll own that, you know, I saw American Wedding in the theater. I remember I was definitely working a camp job that summer, and it was a bunch of the counselors and I, we were all, you know, there watching it. And I think some of it is just that, you know, I too was later in life. You know, I was still in college at that point, but I had grown up some. So it was some of the stuff that would kind of give me a giggle of kind of like, oh, they made a sex joke, or they made a poop joke, that's funny. It didn't really resonate in the same way, you know, for me as a viewer by that point either, which, you know, isn't necessarily fair to put on the movie, but I think for my experience consuming the movie, that was, you know, a piece of it too. But I will say, you know, I don't really remember any of the Bandcamp ones. I think I may have watched at least part of one of them, but I can't really speak to them in any intelligent way. American Reunion, I only saw it once. And it was, I think, you know, pretty soon after it come out to DVD or maybe it was streaming somewhere. I really liked American Reunion, I will say. There's two movies I always kind of link in my head. It's American Reunion and Scream 4. And they're totally different movies, but they're both sort of We had this teen movie that was super popular at the end of the 90s that bled into the 2000s and kind of, you know, lost steam with each iteration of it. Let's give it, you know, 5 or 6 years or more, you know, break, and then come back to the concept. And I feel like if I felt rejuvenated, it felt like, okay, now they're actually doing it again. And it's not what the premise of we're starting a whole new series of films or you know, anything. It's more just, you know, that reunion spirit of it. We're just kind of revisiting these characters people really liked with a script that we had time to actually develop because we weren't churning out movies anymore. But, you know, rather there is that good, you know, number of years in between to really develop something solid. And I think it's a good movie. I don't know if anyone would enjoy it going into it cold. I think you do have to have seen at least American Pie 1 to get it and to be sort of in on the joke and to enjoy it. But I think if you do have a nostalgic attachment to the original American Pie and American Pie 2, that I think American Reunion does work pretty well for what it is. But okay, so with all that, you know, kind of established about the subsequent movies, anything else you want to go into those before we go into our final categories here?
I don't think so. Although, no, actually, there is one thing I'd like to just point out, and I don't know that it really has bearing on anything, but I, you know, with American Pie 1 and 2 and to some extent 3, you know, but really the first two, it's interesting how quick they are. I mean, we're talking about movies that are about an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, after I distanced myself a little bit from those kind of raunchy comedies like that, you know, and got into more like dramas and movies that were oftentimes 2 hours, well into 2 hours, you know, into 2 hours. It when I rewatched American Pie 1 and 2, it was just surprising to me how quickly they went by.
Yeah.
And it's neither good nor bad, but it's just they cram a lot of stuff into the hour and a half.
Yeah.
And what's interesting though is that American Reunion, even though I haven't seen it, I know that its runtime is actually closer to 2 hours. And so I wonder, you know, I mean, you said you've seen it once. Do you think that the material dictates that it be kind of a little bit long?
You know, and I don't know the movie well enough to say like that they really should have cut, you know, half hour of this movie or would have been tighter if they did or so on and so forth. I would certainly have to watch it at least one more time to have those kinds of opinions. But I will say to me, it didn't feel long. And I think it sort of represents sort of a cultural shift of, it's a lot harder to find hour and a half movies nowadays. And I think that to some degree that it's a business consideration. And I think to some degrees that's kind of a formatting consideration of, you know, I think there's some extent to which if people are going to go to a theater, they want to get their money's worth and they feel like they haven't gotten it if they haven't been there for 2 hours. I think some of it too might relate to, you know, the explosion of streaming stuff, like with Netflix now, that there's less constraints on like a movie that, you know, we want it to be shorter. It's sort of like, well, no, it's going to be streaming anyway. There's no consideration of scheduling a movie theater or anything like that. I don't know enough about the business end of that to have a firm opinion. But I will say, I think when we were kind of coming of age, I think kind of straight through the 90s, I think it was more common that comedies were about 90 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, but, you know, didn't really broach that 2 hour mark. Whereas I think it became sort of the industry standard that almost all movies are in that 2 hour kind of, you know, mark and oftentimes longer now. I think that was more common for dramas at that time, but I think it has become, you know, kind of the standard just across the board in a way that I don't know is a good thing. Like the movie I always think of is Superbad. Right, where it's, you know, sort of a teen comedy and sort of in many ways should resonate with the same audience that American Pie would, maybe like a generation later because it came out in like 2007. But that movie, I just looked up it runs at an hour and 13 minutes. So kind of just shy of that 2 hour mark. And, you know, I don't know how you feel. I don't know how many times you've seen Superbad, but I always feel like it's a great movie for the first like half hour, 45 minutes. And it's a really good movie for the last like 20 minutes or so. And in between, it's like, okay. Like it kind of loses itself a little bit, becomes sort of an action movie for a little while. And it just isn't as appealing to me when the plot is kind of in play so much as just, you know, Michael Cera and Jonah Hill, kind of interacting with each other, which I think is really funny. And so I think, you know, as these movies kind of get longer, it kind of pressures them to be something that they aren't. You wedge stuff. But I think it's a really good observation. I think with the first two American Pies, they're pretty tight. There's pieces that haven't necessarily aged as well, but I think in general, there's not a lot of plot lines that I can say, like, yeah, just get rid of that. It's a more fun movie. Like, I think that they actually are pretty well contained.
Well, the thing is that there's a balance, like anything, you know. I mean, I feel like there's, you know, in your example of Superbad, yeah, I think there's definitely parts that could have been condensed and that there was no need for parts to extend and go on for as long as they did. But on the flip side of that, you know, they could have developed more parts of American Pie 1 or American Pie 2, you know, if they wanted to. But and again, there's some limit to that, because then we might have said, okay, well, they spent too much time on this or too much time on that. So, you know, I think it's all about finding the balance. What's interesting to me, though, is that you have, you had said, like, it kind of became the standard to be around the 2-hour mark for various reasons, potentially. But I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of TV series, their episodes have, from my experience, increased to something like at least 45 minutes or sometimes an hour. So it's like the movies have increased in time, but then so have the TV series. And I don't know if that's because it's gives people a little bit more of like a, okay, I'm going to sit down and get something out of this. And it's not just like, you know, it gives the writers time to develop something, and then, but not so long that somebody feels like they need to sit down like and watch an entire movie's worth.
Yeah, no, I'll cop to. I'm not as up on, you know, current TV as I once was, but I feel as though, you know, with, you know, Modern Family ended this past year, you know, How I Met Your Mother ended a few years before that. I feel like those were some of the last of those kind of traditional, you know, sitcoms that run, you know, half hour with commercials. So it's a really closer to like 20 minutes total. And now that there is a real skewing towards longer shows. And I'll say what I kind of like, and I recognize why it doesn't translate everywhere, but you know, shows on Netflix, shows on Hulu, where the episodes are not necessarily uniform length. I just finished watching Outer Banks, for better or worse. There's some real good and some real bad to that show. But there's some episodes that are right around the 40-minute mark. There are some episodes that are over an hour long. It just kind of, it is how long the episode needs to be, right? And it just kind of, it doesn't need to fit a very specific container. And I think that there's some merit to sort of just, you know, a movie as well, just kind of running as long as it needs to. It feels as though, to me, I think that it sounds like you're saying the same thing, that it's kind of inflated now, where there's a lot of kind of, you know, a tendency towards filler or making it long for the sake of being long. You know, I wouldn't have minded either of these movies, the American Pie 1 or 2, you know, being 10 minutes longer, but I also don't miss that time. I also don't feel like they, you know, missed an opportunity to really develop something. I feel like it was the right length for what it was.
Right. And I would agree with that, though. I mean, I'm not complaining about the length, but it's just interesting to see the shift, what you said about kind of these productions being as long as they need to be, the ones present day, at least for some of the TV series like Outer Banks. And I really like that. I really like that, because as long as you don't have those containers, those scheduling constraints that you were talking about with movies, you know, when in the streaming, in the age of streaming here, you know, it kind of lifts all of those and I think you end up with a better outcome when you make it as long as it needs to be. It's just more contoured to what it should be, and have these outside factors kind of dictating the way things should be developed, you know?
Yeah. No, and this is in every industry, and I won't go on too much of a tangent here, but, you know, like even music, for example, right? Like, if you want to have a radio hit, it can't be like a 10-minute song, right? Unless you're like, you know, like Lady Gaga or Taylor Swift or something, and you do something super experimental, and because you're so big, you know, those kind of go along with you. Like, you know, it's got to be like 2, 3, 4 minutes, and that's kind of, you know, what you have to work with. You know, and I think that that works for kind of pop music and in the format of being played on radio. But I think that a lot of times that isn't necessarily the best song. Like I think sometimes a song just needs to be as long as it needs to be. And it doesn't need, you know, 6-7 minute epic, but sometimes that's good for a song, or sometimes that's what fits best. And I know as a writer, you know, what I publish short stories, like a lot of venues, I would say maybe even most venues, don't want to read anything over 5,000 words, which is somewhere in that 20 pages kind of ballpark. And a lot of times I think that actually is a good thing of that, like, well, legitimately people just don't even want to read something longer than that unless they're reading a book. So it makes intuitive sense. But I will say I've had stories where like they come in at around like 5,500 words or 6,000 words, where it's like, all right, if I want to publish this or at least be able to submit it to places for consideration, I've got to pare away, you know, 500 to 1,000 words that I don't think this is making the story better. This is just meeting a guideline now, you know? So I think it translates to a lot of different forms of entertainment and art in sort of interesting ways. But let's go ahead to our last two, you know, segments for the show here. So, you know, first we're going to talk about, you know, would it work today, or how has it aged? You know, in our previous episode, we were talking about the NBA. It didn't necessarily, you know, work as well because we were talking about, you know, a game that is still played at a professional level, that, you know, the rules have changed, the stars have changed, but in some ways more has stayed the same than has changed. In this case, I think it fits a little more naturally. We're talking about, you know, films that came out, you know, the first one about 21 years ago, the second one about 19 years ago. So enough time has passed that this is a distinct kind of product of its time that I think there are elements of it that absolutely still hold up. I think it's still been entertaining today. And there's elements that I think do not pass as well. The first one I wanted to address was the pact that these guys make. That's kind of the core plot point of the movie, that, you know, it's these four friends who say they're all going to try to have sex before, you know, or at prom or before graduation or before they leave for college, or, you know, whatever the exact parameters of it are. This is a part of the movie that I feel has not aged very well. You know, I think the spirit of, you know, guys kind of teaming up for a communal purpose, that part I think kind of holds up. I think the degree to which that sort of objectifies women and kind of makes the women more plot points than full-fledged characters, that doesn't feel as good from a 2020 perspective. Probably shouldn't have felt as good from a 2000 perspective. Any thoughts on that from kind of your perspective?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. I agree that the idea of, you know, the guys having a common goal, I'm 100% with that, but I don't think it's aged well as far as, you know, objectifying women and kind of just looking at that as the end goal for some. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, no, and I think, and, you know, to the movie's credit, I think they do all sort of learn a lesson. Like, it's not like it's just about the sex, and that because, you know, most of the characters do end up having sex, that they've won in some level. But I think that they do, you know, for the most part, find relationships. Like Jim and Michelle is sort of a two movie arc where they, you know, end up as a couple, and then in American Wedding, they're actually, you know, spoiler alert, but they're the ones who are having the wedding. They're getting married. You know, it does carry through. You know, and Oz and Heather, I think that, you know, similarly, it becomes more of a love story than about sex. So I think that there are lessons learned. I don't think it's totally, you know, unredeeming, but I think just the spirit of that being kind of the quest that they're on that doesn't age, you know, so well from a modern lens. And I think that extends to the style of humor as well. I think that there's a place for it. I think a lot of the stuff that's more just kind of, you know, snappy one-liners and that, you know, making sex jokes, I think a fair amount of that still works today. But I think kind of leaning into kind of the gross out humor and especially the parts of it where it's kind of just lazy and kind of just goes to, you know, sort of more homophobic stuff where it's just, you know, one character calling another gay, that doesn't really hold up as well, you know, from a modern lens. And, you know, again, in retrospect, I kind of regret laughing at some of that stuff, you know, in the theater, but, you know, that was the time. And, you know, and I can say I didn't know better, but, you know, I know some of that comes back on me that I regret kind of, you know, feeling that way about that in the moment. But yeah, anything about, you know, the style of the humor or the way that it's presented that kind of, you know, speaks to you in a way that, you know, does or does not translate to 2020?
You know, I don't think the style of humor has aged well at all. I think you're, again, right on point with the fact that, you know, the sheer disregard for like anybody else's feelings and just kind of calling names, you know, at a moment's notice, you know, it's just, you know, these guys are supposed to be friends and they are, but at the same time, they just kind of ridicule one another. And again, that does have its place, but I think the way in which they do that in the movie, I just don't think that would hold up today for you know, groups of friends. It just doesn't, I just don't think it translates well into 2020, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, and there's that culture, you know, and to use kind of a vulgar way of saying it, of kind of ball busting, right? You know, guys just give each other a hard time that, you know, I think can be fun. And, you know, I know that, you know, especially in my younger years, that was a big part of how I joked with people. And I think some of that was just not knowing how else to joke with people. And some of that's, you know, kind of the pop culture templates that I was following. But yeah, I think you're largely right that it doesn't necessarily feel good, right? And I think it still does happen. But, you know, especially in retrospect, especially watching this as adults, it's sort of like, you could be a little bit nicer to each other. Like, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Make an extra dig at a guy, but yeah, you know, in terms of other things though, in terms of how it's aged, you know, one thing as I was looking back at these films that really stood out to me is the lack of diversity in the cast, right? Because these are all straight white people, except for that one lesbian couple that's kind of used very pointedly for, you know, Stifler's kind of fantasy. Otherwise, you know, all of our core characters are straight white people in a way that I feel like if this movie came out, you know, whatever in the last 5 years. There would have to be at least one gay character here who is trying to hook up with someone of the same sex. And all the more so, I feel like there would have to be you know, more visible diversity in terms of a Black character, in terms of, you know, Latino character, maybe an Asian character other than John Cho in that background role. You know, I think of just kind of, you know, representing, you know, some different, you know, aesthetics, some other dimensions of difference here that just don't get represented in these movies.
Well, and frankly, you know, to go off of that, at that time, I mean, if you think about like the Friends cast, right? All straight white people, Seinfeld, you know, straight white people. It's so, yeah, I mean, the times have definitely changed. And what I don't know is, I don't know if it was intentional back then or if it was just that they didn't, it wasn't, if diversity wasn't embraced as much as it is in 2020.
No, I think that's a big piece of it, right? Because in a way that it super stands out now, and I'm sure they'd be ridiculed all over Twitter if they, you know, had to release a movie with this undiverse cast now. I don't think that they got that kind of feedback in that era. And I think that is sort of a symbol of kind of us living in a different society. And I think being a little more aware of this stuff now. But I know I didn't really give it a second thought, you know, in 1999, you know, getting to see this movie the first time in a way that now would be like, huh, that's just sort of weird, right? That they are.
Yes, exactly so. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, so otherwise though, there are two major ways in which technology kind of comes into these films. And the first, I've referenced both of them earlier, but the first is in American Pie 1. There's that webcam scene where basically Jim has Nadia over to his room and he has a webcam set up to stream it all to his friends and everybody, and accidentally sends the link out to like literally everybody at the school, which I don't know really how that would have worked, but captures, you know, Nadia in some compromising positions and then captures him in some compromising positions. And then in American Pie 2, there's, you know, Oz and Heather, you know, trying to have phone sex with each other because they're long distance for the summer. I was curious, you have any thoughts on these things, or how they've aged, how they, you know, resonate now, if it would play differently if we did this in 2020? What do you think about all of that?
I think it would, I mean, I don't think it was particularly acceptable then, and it's, especially in 2020, I think that there would be a huge uproar. I mean, this kind of like the recording and whatnot, I mean, like, that's a felony,
you know? Well, I mean, because at best, Nadia's 18 there, and I don't know if she is.
Right.
And so you're streaming a very probably underage girl naked to the whole school. That's not great.
No, by any stretch. And you know, and it's, there's a little bit of an inconsistency there to me, because after all that goes down, I think Jim's in school the next day and he's talking to his friends, and they said, oh, how's, you know, where's Nadia? And he's like, oh, she's on a plane back to, I forgot exactly where she's from, but, you know, which made it sound like she, I mean, aside from all the legal problems with all that and the, but like that she was,
during deported, essentially.
Yeah. It's more or less. Yet in the second one, she's calling, I mean, if you remember Eugene Levy, Jim's dad, like running in with the phone saying, Jim, it's Nadia, it's Nadia. And so she's calling him back and wanting to talk to him. And I maybe I missed something, but like, is that like, in what, at what point did they reconcile?
And well, Nadia's whole being into nerds thing, I think that feels pretty contrived from kind of a male gaze perspective of like, of course, it's going to be this extremely attractive young woman who just wants to be with a nerd. And so, you know, is realistically attached to Jim for the first two movies and then Terminator by the end of it. Like, I think that that's not very believable. But yeah, practically speaking, too, it's like, I don't know if they were still in touch when she went back abroad. I think they do show in the ending credits the two of them interacting over webcam to some extent, but it's still a little sketchy there. I will say in defense of that first movie that that being such a new technology at that point, I credit them for at least trying, because, you know, I didn't have the technology to be able to, you know, broadcast someone from my room in 1999, although I think that that technology did exist. So I think that actually is kind of, you know, sort of ambitious in a way of them trying to incorporate new technology and sort of makes it stand, because I could see someone doing this, you know, in this era, and probably with the streaming technology actually would probably work better in a lot of ways. Wouldn't be as pixelated. You'd actually be able to know what you're looking at, but nonetheless, I think to your point in terms of the legalities of it and morality of it, that, you know, obviously it's problematic from those lenses.
Right.
But all right, so the last thing I'll touch on, and we don't have to go into very much of this, I will say I think the soundtrack for these movies have aged really well. I think if you're a fan of music of that era in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, they're very listenable. I think there's a lot of music kind of packed in that's, you know, popular music that's bands like Third Eye Blind and, you know, Sum 41 and, Mary Bare Naked Ladies is on there somewhere, where I think that this music, it does represent the time well, right? And I don't know that, you know, objectively speaking, it's great music, but I think, you know, for its time and representing it, it succeeds on that level.
And this is actually an area where it's, I mean, there's the movies, but I would love to focus a little bit on the soundtrack, because this happened to be this particular soundtrack for the first and second movie happens to include some of my favorite bands and some of my favorite songs. I mean, I think you just listed a few of them, but you know, like you said, Third Eye Blind, Blink 182, Tonic, Michelle Branch was I don't know if a lot of people like Michelle Branch, but The Offspring. I mean, so it really was the music of the time. Three Doors Down. I don't know why, but you know, there's that fast-paced, energetic music that you were talking about with Sum 41 and Stifler pounding on the car while they're all driving to the lake house. But then during you know, parts of American Pie 1 where like they're just I think they're all hanging out after prom is when this comes in, but like they play like Bik Runga, and that's like a slower song still of that time, it's a different type of song, it's not as fast paced and all that, and so they seem to really just like get it right, you know. Yeah. With the music, with along with the movie, and it all happens to be music that I just really enjoyed at the time, and even to this day, 20 years later, I still listen to a lot of these bands. Like if I looked on my phone right now, I probably have most of these artists on here, if not all of them. So
No, yeah. And I think it speaks to, I mean, they must have thrown some money at the soundtrack here, because, you know, they have pretty big names. And there's some, you know, like Sway that you mentioned, that, like, I don't necessarily think that one was, you know, as big a hit or as big an artist, but you know, to have all these big names alongside the more kind of, you know, under the surface kind of ones you'd have to really dig in to find. I think it does speak to that it wasn't just kind of throwing music on there, just having ambient noise. It was really, you know, making some decisions and putting some money on it to have major artists of the time that I think, you know, we both have said kind of represent that time period. And if you're someone who was a teenager in that time period, you probably like a lot of this music. Like, it's hard to refute that way. So, But yeah, so I want to move in though to our final segment here, which is our draft here. So we did this last time with picking kind of starting lineups for NBA teams, which, you know, again, in terms of basketball, the draft makes a lot of sense. In terms of movies, it takes a little bit more of an active imagination. But so what we did here was the two of us compiled a list of movies that were, you know, fairly famous that at least I know when I was adding mine that I knew for sure that I had seen a lot and really liked, or at least felt iconic of their time, even if I didn't like them as much. And then, you know, I think you added some as well here that I think both of us have seen. So we have this kind of arbitrary bank of movies. It's by no means exhaustive, but just kind of gives us something to work from. And what we decided we're going to do was to compile movies for a movie marathon. And to give some background context for the listeners, Mike and I used to hang out for New Year's Eve, and usually the core thing we do was just compile a ton of junk food, and we would just watch movie after movie, starting some in the afternoon and going, you know, straight up towards midnight. What I thought we'd do is we'd say, look, we each get American Pie 1 and 2 as part of our movie marathon. So we've already got those two movies slotted. And so maybe we would each just pick two more movies. And if you want to go to three, we could go to three, but to kind of round out our movie marathon here. So, you know, like last time, I'm going to try to pronounce this word correctly. In my magnanimity, I'm going to give it to you to make a first pick. So, you know, again, we can each pick, you know, two movies. Yeah, if you really want to go for three, I'm game for that as well. But for time's sake, if you want to pick just, you know, two movies that you would kind of group with American Pie. And oh, and I should mention this. These are movies I've kind of arbitrarily classified as teen movies of the 90s. Up to 2001, because yeah, we go to American Pie 2, which came out in 2001, so that only seemed fair. So this is going from 1990 to 2001 with, you know, things that I would define as teen movies, set, you know, with high school characters, college characters, you know, roughly that kind of age group.
Well, I appreciate you giving me first pick here, so I have to say though, if I'm picking two movies for a movie marathon to follow up American Pie 1 and 2. I would have to, as a completist, go with American Wedding and then obviously American Pie Reunion. But obviously the years don't work out with those two. But
yeah, that's right.
So those
have rules somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. I think I would pick Dead Man on Campus.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, you know, just. College-based movie. I mean, has Zach Morris in it. Who didn't watch The Bell growing up, right? We can get into it a little bit more if we want, but yeah, there's a lot of funny moments in that movie too. So there's my first pick.
No, and I think that one kind of flies under the radar a little bit, but I think it's a really solid pick. I think it's fun. It's kind of distinctive. Good cast. So. Allison Hannigan appears in that one too, so that you kind of are completest in that way, at least, of her teen roles from that period. So, no, good pick. I'm gonna for my first pick, I'm gonna go ahead and take Can't Hardly Wait, which I like a lot. I think similarly has a great cast and kind of a range of people, and a lot of people in more supporting roles like Seth Green and Breckin Meyer, who would go on to. Some bigger things, but you know, weren't as established at that point, but you know, play significant roles in that movie. But I think it's really funny. I think that it tells a good story. I really love kind of the love story it tells with our two leads. I think it delivers nicely on that, and has a really good soundtrack too. I think just in terms of music of its time, similar to American Pie, I think it really succeeds on that level.
Okay, cool. That's a good pick. That's a good pick. I have to go for my second pick with Road Trip.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Another, of course, Sean William Scott's in that one, along with actually, there are a lot of big names in that movie, but again, you know, seeing his college, you know, guys coming together. Again, the movie's called Road Trip, you know, and I mentioned before that I kind of like the idea of like guys going on like vacation together or like taking a guy's trip together just to kind of bond and hang out and experience life. And, you know, that's kind of the name of the game with this particular movie.
No, and I think that's probably Sean William Scott's best work outside the American Pie series. And I think the reason for that is he's essentially the same character with a different name. So it's really easy to slide into that role for him. It's just kind of the rambunctious, outspoken, you know, kind of comedic guy. So, yeah, that's the topic.
You think more so than Role Models with him and?
Yeah, I mean, I like him in that. Don't get me wrong. And actually, I think Role Models is a fine movie, but I think you could probably slot a number of other guys into that role and it'd be more or less the same movie. Whereas I think the energy he brings to Road Trip in that very specific role, I think sort of makes it for me. I think that'd be probably the hardest character to replace and still, you know, deliver on that movie. But all right, well, so with my other pick, I'm going to go a little bit of left field here, because when I was brainstorming, you know, teen movies, I at first didn't really go into the horror genre, but then when I was thinking about it more, it was like, well, but some of these movies really are teen movies. The movie I'm going to go with is Scream, which was one of my favorites of that era. And I think in some ways, I think we could actually kind of credit it for being responsible for the resurgence of teen movies. I think more widely people think of it as kind of reinventing horror in a time when horror was kind of losing steam and, you know, not as popular. Cause I think Freddy Krueger and, you know, Jason and Michael Myers had all kind of, you know, done their run and it was kind of over, but kind of bringing back the slasher film with sort of a compelling storyline and with, you know, more of a willingness to kill off major characters earlier in the movie. But Scream really resonated with me. It just was one of my favorites from that specific time period. Always liked Neve Campbell. I don't know that she necessarily deserved, you know, a bigger run than she had, but I was always surprised that I thought Scream was so successful. But that's pretty much where it started and ended for her as a movie star, I think. I mean, I know she was in other movies, but in terms of, you know, having a starring role in a major film, that kind of, I think it was it for her. So, really like Scream. So I'm going to put that over some of the movies I probably objectively enjoy more, but I think just in terms of, you know, being an important movie and having kind of mass appeal and sort of influencing things to come, that feels like the right choice to me for that additional movie for my marathon.
Yeah, and that does surprise me a little bit until you just said, you know, there are a couple on here that you objectively enjoy more, because I would have expected from you maybe Angus.
Yeah.
Or one of these other ones that you know, over the course of 20 years, I know, at least 20 years, that I know you enjoy.
No, and Angus would probably be the one that would top all of these in terms of my personal, but I also recognize that, you know, and again, it's the one that probably the least people have seen who are listening to this show, because it was a little bit under the radar. But I personally do. I think I saw it at just the right time in my life, where it's kind of an inspirational story about a nerd who becomes, you know, has his moment of glory, and I kind of saw it when I needed to see it, but I don't know that it translates as well today. But I will put the soundtrack to that one above any other soundtrack as well. It's a really solid output. There's some Green Day on there, a lot of other, you know, bands of the moment of kind of the early to mid 90s that I think really works well. And you know, and just to round things out, you know, we'll stop our draft at this point, but I'll say for me, 10 Things I Hate About You, was a close contender for me. I think that's a really fun movie that has aged pretty well. And in part, I think because there are female protagonists, and so there's less of kind of the sexism that kind of, you know, pervades it the way it does some of these other movies. And Varsity Blues, I just really like. I'm not really a football guy, but for whatever reason, James Vanderbeek putting on that fake Southern accent and pretending he's a football player for 2 hours just kind of jives for me. I find it very rewatchable. I like that movie a lot. Any others on this list that kind of stand out? Again, we're kind of done with the draft format, but anything else that, you know, speaks to you as a movie that, you know, you just would want to make mention of this kind of genre?
Well, you know, one that's on here is Hackers. I'm not sure that's one that a lot of people have seen either. But maybe. I mean, I remember when I first saw it. I mean, I have a pretty decent understanding of computers, and so when you see a movie like Hackers and the fact that it's kind of wildly inaccurate as far as a lot of the things go.
So you've never held a computer disc out in an alley for some dude to skateboard over and take it.
That part is actually very accurate, but
yeah. No, okay. Like, that happened to me a few times. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, do I smoke two cigarettes with one in each hand? Not usually. I mean, not that that's technology, but, yeah, there's parts where they take turns, like just getting on the keyboard and keying away. Like you can divide and conquer with hacking like that, you know, but in any case, I get the spirit of the movie, and you know, there were some interesting parts and some, you know, just the fact that it's a hacking type movie, and that kind of interested me back in the day. You know, I enjoyed the movie, and I think I even bought it at one point. But one thing I want to mention about it is that, you know, we talked earlier about how sometimes it was the kind of background characters that really had the big careers following these mm-hmm. movies, and Angelina Jolie was in that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you know, again, a prime example of like I couldn't even tell you who the main character was.
The character's name was Dade.
Yeah, it was Dade. Was his character name, but that's about that may have been one of his only movies. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, Matthew Lillard's in that movie and Jesse Bradford's in that movie, but yeah, Dade, the lead character, you know, solidly, it's not like it's close in the ensemble cast, like he's the lead guy, and right, I couldn't name anything else that he was ever in.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it's it kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, when it comes to these, you know, we talk about these movies in our past because, you know, we think about where we were at the time and you know, the various elements that we liked or disliked about the movies. But from what's the word I'm looking for? Just reviewing them kind of where we are.
More objective kind of?
Yeah, more objective. You can see that, like, in several of these cases, this is like the beginnings of some really great actors and actresses. Yeah. You know, we couldn't have known it at the time necessarily, even if we had a more objective eye. But in any case, it just gives us a different way to watch the movies when we look back on them in 2020.
Yeah, no, and you know, and not to go way into it, but I'll say Hackers, I feel like it faces a similar challenge to The Social Network, being that it's a movie about people using computers, which to dramatize that in any sort of way that's both realistic and entertaining, it's almost a paradox, right? Just someone sitting at a keyboard and typing, like, how do you do that? And you know, and I think Social Network does a stronger job of it, and you know, may or may not be realistic. I don't know enough about programming to have any intelligent opinion on that. But at least of dramatizing the pieces that do feel more dramatic and then adding, you know, key plot points to kind of, you know, make it work. Whereas Hackers, I think they're kind of putting it aside of like, okay, computers are kind of in right now and hacking is kind of has some mystique around it. Let's go ahead and build this teen drama that otherwise has nothing realistic to do with computers about it and just kind of run with it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. but all right, well, any closing last thoughts that you'd want to put in about of American Pie 1 and 2, of all of this kind of, you know, 90s teen nostalgia, before we wrap up this episode?
I think they've bled the series dry. I want to say American Reunion, I read, maybe made $7 million, budget of 50, made 57 maybe. Mm-hmm. So they're really at the tail end there, but with all of that said, I'm waiting for American Divorce or I don't know what would be after that, but I don't know. I mean, let's just say it wouldn't surprise me if for some reason something like that surfaced, given the way that it had progressed since the first one in 99.
You know, I think if they did a straight to Netflix film that was like Jim as the dad now and his hapless teenage son, I think that could be okay. With the right casting for the teenage cast, obviously you need to rely more on the young cast, I think, for that to make sense and to really work. But I think there might be some potential there. I think I don't think they can go back to the well with the exact same, you know, cast and put them in the same kinds of situations again. I could be wrong, but I think you're right. They probably bled that dry at this point. But yeah, I could imagine some other take on it or kind of a riff off of it if they really wanted to.
Maybe take a few cues from Cobra Kai.
Yeah, well, because that's the thing of it, that, like,
yeah,
I would at least watch an episode of that for a TV show or, you know, as a film. I would probably sit down and start watching. I might not get through the whole thing if it's not very good, but if you put American Pie in front of it and you put it available for streaming, I'm probably going to give it a shot. So I think there's enough people of our generation who have a similar mindset that that could work.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. Well, all right. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to us this time. Special thanks go out to our friend Mike Peake for providing the music for this show. But otherwise, please be kind, rewind, and we'll catch you next time.